It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Behind the Headlines, a brand new podcast from The Independent. I'm Ben Kelly, and each episode we'll be speaking to our correspondents and other experts to better understand what is happening around us, across the worlds of politics, culture, sport, and more. As ever, this week's news has been dominated by the latest coronavirus stories, but alongside that, another old news favourite has crept back into view. Yes, you guessed it, Brexit. Or life after Brexit, to be more specific. This week, we've had the first glimpse of the government's advertising campaign to get the country Brexit ready. We've heard from the Home Secretary about her immigration plans, and we've learned what travel will be like for Brits heading to Europe after the transition period. To discuss this all more, I'm joined by our policy correspondent, John Stone, and our trusty travel correspondent, Simon Calder. Gentlemen, you're very welcome. John, I'll come to you first. Let's talk about this campaign the government is set to launch, the UK's new start, Let's Get Going. It all sounds very positive. Am I right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd say that's actually the main characteristic of the campaign. If you weren't aware of what the changes were and if you didn't read the details, you might make it sound like they were announcing something that was very good and, you might expect to gain something out of it. But when you plunge down into the details, it's not fantastic. It's really telling people about things that will get more inconvenient, things that you'll lose. I'm sure Simon on the travel end of it will get into the details specifically of what it means for travellers. But politically and in policy terms, it's really just a load of new restrictions coming in, framed as a sort of quite upbeat thing. It does actually make me wonder a little bit whether it's the right framing, because it might be politically convenient for the government to put this as a positive thing, you know, not get ready for this terrible policy we're bringing in. But will people actually pay that much attention to a positive campaign? If they think it's good, they might think, well, I can take advantage of this when I need to, rather than I definitely need to get something sorted so that I'm not stuck at a border at midnight or something like that.
Yeah, so it's all very, let's get ready, but it's about sort of red tape and border checks and, you know, it's more of a prep for, as you say, the negative things that are coming with it. But you could argue this was always going to happen, wasn't it? We were always going to face the realities.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, one comment that I saw that I thought summed it up quite well was that essentially if you delve into the detail of this, you know, the return of roaming charges, there's a potential that people might have to fill in a sort of mini visa at some point down the line. That's not coming in straight away, and Simon might elaborate on that later. But it actually reads a little bit like something that might have been written by the Remain campaign in like April 2016 or something like that. It's kind of like a list of Project Fear sort of coming through, but presented in quite a nice upbeat package I'm looking at one of the billboards they've got here, and it's got a very happy looking guy smiling and leaning on the edge of a ferry. I don't know why he's happy about potentially having to fill in a load of export summary declarations. But
the only reason I can think that he would be happy is because of the fantastic opportunity to buy duty-free. Now, you guys are obviously too young to remember the world before the year 2000, but I, funnily enough, do. And yes, the duty-free business was so lucrative that you actually had ferry companies paying people to go to Calais and back, not getting off the boat, none of that going messing around with all that funny foreign food and garlic and strange cigarettes and everything. You would just be on the boat in order to pick up your duty-free and then come back. And they knew that you would be you'd be so delighted you spend a fortune, and that would make it worth them running the ferry. So that's the only reason why anybody I can possibly see would take any joy from this at all. And that's a fairly narrow band, actually, of people who just want a limited quantity of cheap spirits and tobacco.
Sorry, if I may, that's actually a very good point, Simon, that I hadn't focused on. And I do wonder, in your view, so obviously we still have shops that are kind of branded as duty-free, like World Duty Free and stuff. There's one in the Eurostar departures lounge. I think it was added quite recently. Do you think that these places are going to pass on the savings to consumers? Is that likely to happen?
Look, here's how the actual real duty-free world works. At the moment, when you go to Brussels Airport or Paris Charles de Gaulle or Frankfurt or Barcelona or wherever, you will be invited as you are boarding, just before you board your flight to the UK, to buy so-called duty-free. Of course, it's not, because still during the transition phase, we are in the customs union, and that means that there is no actual duty saving to be made. However, there are cross-border savings, which have always been in place. You know, it is the fact that in some countries, particularly Belgium, I used to get all my tobacco cheap from there. And the very high duty on spirits in the UK means it's generally worth buying those things. What happens with actual duty-free, and this applies if, for example, you're going to Switzerland or Norway, the duty and VAT on those products is zero, and that actually means that they could sell you a bottle of very decent whiskey for £3 and probably still make a profit, but they'll prefer to sell it to you for £15 and still make a profit. So they certainly won't be passing on very much of the savings, but it will still be cheaper than it is now in that very limited case.
Interesting.
So that sort of covers some of the personal stuff, and certainly we know our chap's going to be very happy with the cigarettes. But looking on a bigger scale in terms of businesses, John, what can businesses take from what you've learned so far from the government?
So to be honest, they've not had a very long time to prepare. So the government actually announced, the main businesses that will be affected are those that are importing and exporting across into or out of the European Union. And they're basically going to have to fill in quite a lot of extra paperwork. They'll have export summary declarations, entry declarations. There may even be, depending on what happens at the end of talks this year, tariffs to pay, although the government has said that if there are, there won't be there'll be a sort of delay of about 6 months. It's basically not. It's a bit strange for the government to be launching an information campaign when actually a lot of the information for businesses still isn't entirely clear. That's what you'll get if you talk to anybody. I was talking to the Pharmaceuticals Association yesterday, and they were saying, well, we don't know. It depends on negotiations. The port authorities will tell you much the same. It really depends whether a free trade agreement's in place. So for travellers, we do know mostly what's going to happen. But for businesses, it's still very uncertain. They're still worried about that. And really, the government's sort of decision to go right up to the line has basically made that happen. It's not something that needed to happen. If they'd kind of extended talks and said, we're going to take this slowly, then there might have been a little bit more space to give businesses time to prepare after the fundamentals were settled down.
I mean, John, you and I, Simon's very kind in saying that we're young, but we are old enough to remember the last campaign, which was to prepare for a no deal Brexit. And that was just last year. And then that kind of, didn't need to go through in the end. Could that one be sort of dragged back out again and then repolished if we get closer to the deadline?
Yeah, so that's actually a really interesting thing to consider, that last campaign, because essentially what happened there was a lot of businesses prepared for the possibility of a no deal, which cost them a lot of money. So they had to do things like store up extra inventory in case there was disruption. Some of this might have been perishable. They had to put in new procedures in place, new checks. They had to basically review all the regulations. It cost these guys quite a bit of cash, and then it didn't happen. And I mean, if you've ever run a business or worked near a business, I mean, you'll know that businesses don't really like spending money when they don't have to. It's rather the point of running a business is to make money, not to spend it. And so that actually that's an issue this time. Because they've basically, a lot of these companies there was an issue getting people to prepare in the first place. A lot of businesses, there was an estimate that, many of them weren't ready. But those that did prepare basically got stung. So now they're being asked to look at it again. It's a little bit sort of fool me once. Like, well, should we really prepare and spend all this money and get stung again? Or should we just sort of chance it like the others? So there's two risks. There's one risk that more businesses will be encouraged not to prepare for the situation. And that means that if there is a no deal, there'll be even more disruption because fewer people will be ready, fewer businesses will be ready. And it also means that if they do prepare and there isn't a no deal, all these extra costs are in place.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Simon, I'm going to turn to you because, many of us have been temporarily concerned this year with our holidays being cancelled or made more difficult because of the coronavirus pandemic. But this week you've written that British travellers can face, and I quote, the worst possible outcome after the Brexit transition period, which is the end of this year into next year. What can we expect there?
Well, it starts really before you get to the airport in the sense that John mentioned the possibility of visas. Those aren't going to be coming in this year or next year, but almost certainly from 2022. And this is something we've known about actually since well before the Brexit talks and everything else. It was being discussed in Europe when we were a member. So before the referendum, the electronic travel information and authorization system. And this is basically a copy of the US ESTA scheme. So it's an online, what I'm going to call it a Euro visa, although technically it's not actually a visa, but it's something you will need to get before you go even on your booze cruise to Calais if you're getting off the boat. And it basically costs about, I think, €7 is the cost, so £6. And it's valid for 3 years. But you have to fill in really quite a lot of intrusive detail, including about your health, your education, criminal convictions, and so on. So that's going to be very, very different. But in the immediately from the 1st of January, well, let's begin with passports, because you may well not be able to get in, even if your passport shows that it's all got almost 15 months of validity. One of the strange things about the Schengen area, which is encompasses almost all the EU countries, plus a few hangers on Norway, Switzerland, Iceland, and of course, plucky Liechtenstein. They're perfectly happy for the UK to have passports valid for more than 10 years while we're a member. But as soon as we're not, they say we do not recognise any document as being valid once it's more than 10 years old. So you've got this bizarre thing where the UK used to have a really good idea, which was that we're going to give people credit for unspent time on their passports. So your passport was due to expire on the 31st of December. You renew it on the 31st of March, and they give you a passport valid for 10 years and 9 months, which is great. But not for the Schengen countries. And that means that any passport issued more than 9 months and 9 years and 6 months ago, I hope you're following this, there'll be a test afterwards, is not regarded as valid. And unfortunately, the government in their official message got a couple of things wrong, and I immediately got onto them. I'm just actually checking. They said your passport had to be valid for no more than 10 years, but it's unfortunately more complicated than that. They even said you need a passport for Ireland, and of course that's not the case either. So the message, which isn't great, was also inaccurate. In the unlikely event that you're actually allowed onto a plane to go to Europe, well, yes, you step off the plane, bing, your phone lights up and says, welcome to France or wherever. And at the moment, of course, because we're in the transition period, still pretending to be in the European Union, it's great because you get free roaming access. It's roam like you're at home is the EU slogan, and it's one of the many, many benefits of EU membership. So that may or may not stay on. So it all depends who you're talking to. Three, the mobile provider, who've actually done quite a lot in terms of free roaming in lots of places, say, nope, it's all going to be the same. EE say they're talking to, I think, 140 different mobile phone operators around Europe to try to negotiate deals for it to stay in place, but it's all a bit shaky. Now, if you happen to have a pet, well, start planning now. A dog, a cat, or indeed, Ben, I think you have a ferret, if I'm not mistaken. You're going to have to start planning 4 months ahead for a trip to Europe, because it's still not clear what the veterinary rules will be. I mean, it is certain that they will be tougher than they are now. But I think the thing which is really going to hurt a lot of people more than anything else, it's not simply faff and expense and red tape. It's the abandonment of the principle of reciprocal healthcare, which has been around even since before we joined the European Union. The idea that you fall ill in France, in Spain, in Italy, you can get treatment more or less free at a local public hospital. And that is to be abandoned, we learned this week. So the European Health Insurance Card valid only until the 31st of December. Now, it's possible some countries like Portugal have hinted that they may actually allow us to be treated in public hospitals, even though there's no reciprocal agreement in place. But for the vast majority of British travellers who rely on EHIC, either to reduce their insurance costs or they just use it instead of insurance, well, it's going to be pretty bleak. Typically, I've been speaking to lots of people like this. Older retired people will go and spend months over the winter from maybe October through to March, somewhere lovely in southern Spain or Portugal or Italy or whatever. And they don't need insurance. They just rely on EHIC. But the first surprise is that they won't be able to spend 5 months there because of the limits on the amount of time we'll be able to spend there, 90 days and 180. And the other one is that, go over there and get your travel insurance, which is likely, by the way, to increase in cost because the insurance companies made a saving by insisting on the use of EHICS. So that's, I think, actually, strangely, going to affect a lot of people, perhaps in the older age bracket, perhaps who voted for Brexit. And I absolutely salute John's assessment of this is, yes, what Project Fear might have put out in April 2016, and which was immediately rubbished by the Leave side.
Yeah. And that takes me back to, I was going to go back to John and just say, you know, John, looking this from a more political perspective now, are people going to be happy that this is what they voted for? Or is there going to be a lot of Remainers saying, I told you so, and Leavers kind of saying, well, you know, this is the price of our exit from the EU? Are those lines going to sort of fall back into the old two tribes?
I think we can certainly, I don't like to predict the future, but one thing I think we can be certain of is that there'll be a lot of Remainers saying, I told you so, as they've been saying it since for a long time now already. But whether public opinion will change, I don't know. I think a lot of people may not be directly affected by this. I think the share of blame might be seen. It might, you know, there's a sort of narrative that Europe is, Brussels is punishing the UK for deciding to leave. There's not quite an acceptance of the idea that this is a necessary consequence of the government's decisions. And to be fair, it isn't a necessary consequence of Brexit. You could leave the EU and keep a lot of these advantages. So Simon mentioned before that that Norway is in the Schengen area. I know firsthand that you can use an EHIC in Norway. A friend of mine got a hernia there a while ago. It's not a member of the European Union, but it's a member of the Single Market and the Customs Union, and it signs up to a lot of the Single Market, and it signs up to a lot of EU regulations, and particularly on borderless travel. And it would have been entirely possible to have a close relationship with the European Union and to leave. And indeed, the government did recognise this at the beginning, actually. A lot of these things, so roaming, EHIC, these are all things that if you'd asked the government about them in the last, at any point really since 2016 until they were confirmed to be going, they would have said to you, oh, that's a matter for the future relationship. That will be negotiated in the future relationship. And actually one thing that's done is it's sort of softened the political blow of them disappearing because there wasn't really a definitive point where you could say, oh, that's not happening. Or by the time it did, it was by the time there was a definitive point, like maybe last week when EHIC was fully confirmed, it was kind of assumed anyway, and it wasn't really seen as much of a story. And in that respect, you know, when it did come to the future relationship, essentially on every call, the government's decision has been, oh, well, if there's a choice between being close to the EU and being far away from the EU, we'll be far away and we won't get this advantage, and we'll have, in their view, is that they'll have more flexibility to set their own policies. The flexibility really comes at sort of a governmental level in terms of negotiating trade deals and things like that. And, you know, you can debate whether or not those advantages outweigh the disadvantages. But there certainly won't be any benefit for individual travellers, apart from, as Simon says, duty free, which is. But really, in terms of the rights, there isn't really a sort of thing that replaces it. Whether that will have an effect on public opinion, it's very difficult to say. I think the battle lines are so drawn on this, I wouldn't be expecting some sort of a sea change when it happens.
Can I just pick up on that, actually? Because I am genuinely astonished at the response that since I put out what was basically just a factual analysis of everything that the government put out, I have been given an absolute roasting on social media. Here we are. One's just popped up now. I used to respect your point of view, but it seems you're just another Remona. You fell for EU propaganda too. What intrigues me is that, of course, this is entirely based on what the government says is going to happen. And yet it seems to be that there are an awful lot of Leave voters who are still describing it as Project Fear. At what stage, given your political antennae, John, do people think, it is as bad as people said it would be, if at all, or do they just blame the EU? And also, Ben, see, there's going to be this two-tier nation after this, because you are entitled to an Irish passport, which gives you full rights anywhere in the EU. And John, I don't think we are we?
No, unfortunately not. My dad's from Wales, which is probably the last Celtic nation that's going to go independent. So I won't be getting one for many decades, I imagine.
I have to say, I already have mine, so I am sorted out.
Yeah, it's a really interesting and difficult question, and I think the only real answer is that it will depend on the individual person. I think if you look at polls, there is actually a relatively slim, but nonetheless a minority of people who did vote for Brexit who have changed their minds about it. You know, there haven't really been that many voting intention polls recently for referendum. But
well, we had a general election not that 7 months ago, and that was overwhelmingly get Brexit done. And so presumably the majority of people should be delighted.
It's true, although in terms of the polls for if another referendum were held today, we were consistently seeing that share drop below 50%. The answer is a lot more complicated when it's a question of would you like to rerun the referendum or that. And it's also worth pointing out that the government say if it gets 45% of the vote in a general election, that's enough to win a massive majority in a general election, but not necessarily to win. Well, it's certainly not enough votes to win a referendum, because it's less than 50%. But it's I think you can say there's still a huge and substantial constituency of people who are convinced Brexit's a fantastic idea. Maybe they're aware of the drawbacks and they don't care, or maybe they're not aware of the drawbacks. Maybe they don't think that the drawbacks will necessarily apply to them. Perhaps they don't go abroad that much, or perhaps they think it's a price worth paying. But I think it's... there has been a slight receding, but I don't think you'll see that constituency actually disappear, and especially while it's essentially in power, where the government, it's the government's main political constituency, and they'll basically be pushing that agenda relatively hard for a long time, I think.
This is all quite disappointing, I think, in the sense that obviously it sounds as though there is not going to be... some kind of turning of the tide. Sorry, I say that obviously from the point of view of somebody who loves travel and therefore, despite the many flaws of the European Union, voted to remain in it. And I kind of just imagined that from New Year's Day, when people realise just what they're getting, there might actually be a kind of, okay, well, look, come on, let's, this is ridiculous. We've thrown away all these things we've enjoyed for the last 40 years. Can we get some of them back, please? Presumably it's not, the only cost is political as opposed to economic. But you're saying that that's not going to happen, John?
Well, I'm not saying it's impossible. I can't predict the future, but it's my sort of feeling of how things have gone. I think it's just got so entrenched as an identity thing. I think we've, in a lot of areas of politics, we've seen a situation where it's the facts on the ground don't matter as much as they used to, or maybe they never mattered that much at all. The government, through covering the talks process, the government has essentially been saying black is white on a lot of issues. I mean, Boris Johnson stood there during the election and said on the question of the Irish Sea that there would be no customs checks on the Irish Sea. And he's still not really personally come out and said it. The government admits it through back channels. Officials will tell you, yes, there'll be checks on the Irish Sea, or you'll need to do, certainly in one direction. And there's debate about whether they'll be in both directions. In terms, this is about moving goods across the Irish Sea. But the Prime Minister and the people who the people who are actually paid attention to, are very happy to downplay these disadvantages. I mean, turning back to the advertising campaign, we can see the framing of it. It's not, it's not a sort of humble admission that this is what you're losing. It's here's your great opportunity to small print, have to pay more for your mobile phone bill and health insurance. I think if we're expecting an honest reckoning on this, I think it, you know, if there is a shift in public opinion, it'll be a lot more subtle than that and a lot more messy. I can't ever see there being a kind of honest reckoning in that respect. But you know, I hope I'm wrong on that. But it's just the way that I've seen the debate go in the past. And you know, things do change. You know, things have been, Brexit itself came out of the blue, so maybe this could come out of the blue too.
Well, certainly we are seeing more and more of the reality of what we can expect, and I think it's important that we do keep looking at it like this, because obviously coronavirus is as big an issue as it is. Brexit's not going away either, and we've got to be aware of it. That's all we've got time for today. So I want to thank you both, John.
Thank you.
And Simon, thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you're a new listener to Behind the Headlines, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you listen. And if there are stories you'd like to hear discussed on the show, then please let us know. You can email behindtheheadlines@independent.co.uk. You can also support this show and original journalism at The Independent by signing up as a supporter. Details are on the description of this podcast. I'm Ben Kelly. Thank you for listening. And until next time, goodbye.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.